complete a deal this year with Russia, a successor to their expired nuclear arms control treaty. The U.S. mission in Geneva has released a statement saying that its delegation has left for home and will return to Geneva for more negotiations next month. That statement says the two sides hope to finalize the new treaty at that time. President Obama and his Russian counterpart, Dmitry Medvedev, had been hoping to sign a new deal before the end of the year. The 1991 Strategic Arms Reduction Treaty expired December 5th. However, both countries have agreed to continue to honor its main provisions until a successor treaty is in place. I'm Carl Castle, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from Novo Nordisk, committed to changing diabetes through treatments, partnerships, and education. Defeating diabetes is our passion and our business.
News from NPR is made possible by a grant from Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, offering pinch-proof doors, keyless digital entries, and lifetime manufacturer's warranties. Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, serving businesses and families with professionally installed doors and automatic openers since 1959 in Ogden, Illinois.
Welcome to a special two-hour edition of Live and Local for WYLL AM and FM. I'm Kevin Kelly. Bah Humbug Productions, in collaboration with Parkland Theater at Parkland College in Champaign, just wrapped up its third annual production of its own adaptation of Charles Dickens' classic novel, A Christmas Carol. 15 minutes from now, we will present a complete performance of that production, recorded live in our studio. Nick Schneider adapted the novel for the stage with musical episodes by Tim Shermer and song lyrics by Seamus Riley and Sherry Coons. Nick, in turn, adapted the stage production for this radio performance. Our collaboration was the brainchild of Harriet Williamson, producer for The Afternoon Magazine and Focus 580 on WYLL AM. Harriet explains her inspiration.
Radio is a very powerful and flexible medium and used in different ways throughout the world. But in our country, the programming format is, generally speaking, music or some kind of information like news, weather, sports. And back when radio first began, theater, be it comedy or drama, was an important element of radio programming. And, for example, Studs Terkel tells the story of walking down a street in Chicago in the summer when the windows are open and how everyone had on their radio Amos and Andy. And so people used to tune into their favorite radio programs, as people do today, turning into their favorite TV programs. And it would seem that radio, being this wonderful medium for listeners, and especially for theater and comedy, because you can add, through your imagination, so much to what is going on the air, what you are listening to, that it's unfortunate that theater is no longer a part of radio today. Perhaps in other parts of the world, theater is in existence on the radio, but I would say for the most part in the U.S., you don't generally hear comedy or drama on the air. Nick Schneider and I have talked for several years about trying to do something here at WILL. And for some reason this year, I just felt compelled to say, okay, instead of talking about it, let's just do it. And it was a natural fit for us to say, let's do this with A Christmas Carol, the production that Nick is involved in at Parkland, and it has just been completed in terms of its production. And amazingly enough, Nick wrote a new script for radio, and he actually took into consideration what was necessary to make this a more logical piece of entertainment for radio versus the theater.
Producer Harriet Williamson. A few weeks ago, while the Parkland Theater production of A Christmas Carol was still in rehearsal, Nick Schneider, Tim Shermer, and a number of cast members gathered here at WYLL to preview a few scenes on Live and Local on FM 90.9. At the time, I asked Nick if the project had originated with him.
Well, it was my idea. And I've been in the Champaign, my wife and I have been in the Champaign area since about 1988. And theater is part of our background. We all both have degrees in the theater. I didn't come here as a theater person. I came here as a scientist, a kind of second career. But at any rate, I began to get involved with local theater, Champaign Urbana Theater Company. And I noticed that while we were developing an annual production of the Nutcracker, no one was doing an annual production of A Christmas Carol. Hundreds of theaters around the country do an annual production, some of them more famous than others, but the closest one to here, of course, is the Goodman Theater in Chicago's production of A Christmas Carol, which it does every year. So I thought, well, let's put something together. Originally, I looked at the scripts that were available. You can go out and purchase the royalties for a particular script, various versions. And the one I kind of liked was the one that was done originally by the London Royal Shakespeare Company. And it had a lot of music involved with it. And I thought, you know, we need to do that. But I don't want to get in. This is not a musical. So I thought I could do an adaptation if I could find someone to integrate some music for me. And, of course, I have this dear friend of mine and musical colleague, Tim Schirmer. And somehow I conned him into this whole thing. I think I offered him an apple or a pear or an old banana, something along those lines.
He said we'd do it only once is what it was.
Yeah, but how can that be motivation for a composer who wants his music to be
exactly.
heard again and again?
No.
Anyway, that's what started it. So what we did it in a collaboration. I put together a basic adaptation from my point of view, my interpretation of what Dickens meant within his story. And then Tim enhanced that with the musical accents that we needed. The idea is that the music contained within the adaptation is music not that furthers the plot of the story directly, but enhances the, I guess, the ambiance of what the story is telling.
That was Nick Schneider, writer and producer of Bah Humbug Productions' A Christmas Carol, speaking on FM 90.9's Live and Local back in November. Composer Tim Schirmer talked about the role of music in their production.
I made a promise to myself that I wasn't going to do yet another musicalization of Christmas Carol, turning it into a musical. Sherry Coons and I had done an adaptation of Cricket on the Hearth about in 94 that actually from which one of the songs is lifted and placed in this show. That was our Christmas musical that we thought we were going to, you know, market and do well with. This show, when Nick approached me about it, it was really with the idea of it being a play with music, and that made a lot more sense. So what we've done is basically frame the story with an opening number and a closing number. All of the interior cues are either songs that take place in a situation live as a song would take place at a party, such as the Fezziwig party in Act One. Or singing Christmas carols, we have a recurring theme, sort of we have a sextet who wanders about London streets singing Christmas carols, acting as transition music from scene to scene and also sometimes within a scene, as you're going to hear. And other than that, the music really is just there to keep the story moving along.
The text, is it taken out of Dickens or are these things that you imagined and put in between?
The external cues, the closing and opening number or lyrics written by Seamus Riley. We tried to write a song in the style of the, you know, early to mid-Victorian kind of period, that roughly speaking, to make it not anachronistic at least. So the opening number is a very basic, primary, it's almost the 1-4-5 of a major scale. That identifies that would be said you could hear very plainly in the opening number and closing number. So it's like a street caller, a street vendor kind of song, that kind of a feel.
We also had a challenge. Dickens, in his novella, A Christmas Carol, talks about Tiny Tim singing a song called Little Boy Lost in the Snow. Now, no lyrics are given. Of course, it's a story. He just mentions that. If you read through that, you'll see that mentioned. But we wanted to create that song. And we did. Tim wrote a tune for that, and Seamus wrote the lyrics. We find it's difficult to utilize in the play for practical reasons because of the way it has to appear. But nonetheless, we have actually created the song Dickens talked about in his story.
We weren't the first folks to do that. Other composers have set something and called it A Child Lost in the Snow or Boy Lost in the Snow. Actually, this is the first year. Nick Hedrick, one of his other requests of our first year was that we use no instrumentalists except those instruments that could be done live by actor-singers on stage.
Uh-huh.
We did that for 2 years. As we both discovered, it grew more and more difficult to find people who could do all of those things. So I finally convinced him that we should record the instrumental accompaniment when possible for the external cues especially, not the the onstage stuff will still be live or a mix.
Nick Schneider and Tim Schirmer speaking about Parkland Theater's production of A Christmas Carol. I asked Nick about some of the particular challenges of making this adaptation.
Much of the novella, of course, is narrative. And many times when you even see the story, there's a lot of narration going on. When you do it live, of course, the narration is reduced to a minimum. At best, the exposition has to be done in terms of dialogue, in the terms of what one character says to the other. We've used at least one device here, and that's we built this show on the idea that Fred, the nephew, or the actor that's playing the nephew, is telling the story to us. He says at the beginning, when the after the opening number or part of the opening number, he says, "Good evening. Tonight, my friends and I are going to tell you the story of." And so we use that device. It's actually not been used before. Thornton Wilder uses it as a stage manager in one of his plays. In a number of other plays, he has the same type of character. And so Fred provides this kind of link, narrates. For example, before each ghost appears, Fred makes a comment about where his uncle has been to and where he's going, so that the audience not only sees that but gets a sense that the story is being told in this way.
So does that give you an opportunity to use some of Dickens' own narration and put it in the mouth of Fred, or you didn't do that so much?
Actually, all of the narration done by Fred is, we'll call it Schneider narration. It's not Dickens. As I approached the novella and the words, I may have indicated, I lifted those things of Dickens that were necessary. And basically, you know, it's not plagiarism because it's actually public domain, or it's not copyrighted anymore. But the point is that the next challenge was, when I wrote new scenes, I had to write it in a Dickensian style. And I missed up a couple of things. For example, I misused the word great. Not the fact that Dickens doesn't have the word great in the language of the times, in the Victorian times, but it's how it's used. Another little mistake I made, I would say wages, when in Victorian times you would just say wage. So you couldn't say, I've earned my wages for the week. You would say, I've earned my wage for the week. So little things like that, we tried to, you know, I missed up a couple of those. I fixed those by now. But when I wrote a scene between Bell and Scrooge, which doesn't really occur, you know, I had to have a dialogue between these two, young Scrooge, what we call young Scrooge and Bell, we had to create the right kind of sense about that.
What do you think is this is your chance to expound on this, if you have something to expound on. What do you think is the appeal of this story? I mean, there are tons of stories that have been told over the centuries, and most of them disappear. And this one...
This is one of the first Christmas stories in terms of, you know, the Christmas in at least the English-speaking countries, principally Britain, was not celebrated for throughout the entire sort of Cromwell and the Protectorate and all of that stuff. All religious connections were severed to the old Roman tradition through the Anglican tradition. So this was one of the first times that Victoria's husband was German and introduced the Christmas tree into English tradition and via that through into American tradition as being a standard symbol in during this holiday season. And so all of the stuff that we connect, as Americans especially, connect to Christmas traditions really ultimately stem back to this period, and probably a great number of them to this novella.
Yeah, and another thing from my perspective, and I included in the words of one of the what we call Fred's Fabulous Six, this touring group that basically, supposedly, the heart of the tellers of the story, and it's Beatrice, and she says to the audience, it's really a story about life. History, as you know, very well know, has a way of repeating itself regardless of our best efforts to change it. And those repetitions, those ghosts of history, are what haunt us. And I think that when you tell this story, whatever position in life you are, whatever age in life you are, you take away something different from it. But in fact, we still have the same sort of problems and issues that confronted Dickens and the Victorian age at that time, the thing he was trying to talk about, inequality in class and so forth and so on, those still exist within us, much to our chagrin, actually. And I think that story keeps coming back and it picks on us, and we want to listen to it thinking, it's just an old story. But in fact, it's very real. It is to me. I mean, that's my perspective of it.
Well, there's probably a remarkable number of us who really could use our own personal ghosts of Christmas past, present, and future, or yet to come, I guess he says.
Well, that's another line. Charlotte says, let me just interesting you say that. And while this is a story for the time of Christmastide, it's surely a ghost story about ghosts we all know, or more likely fear to know, the ghosts of past, present, and future.
Writer and producer Nick Schneider with composer Tim Schirmer speaking in November on Live and Local on FM 90.9 about their production for Parkland Theater of Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol. I'm Kevin Kelly. And now, for the first time anywhere, Act One of this special radio adaptation, recorded live at WYLL AM and FM Urbana.
The following special radio broadcast of A Christmas Carol, as produced by Bah Humbug Productions and Parkland College Theater, is presented with permission of the authors. Any subsequent use or rebroadcast without the author's permission is strictly prohibited.
In December of 1843, 156 years ago, the first of five short Christmas stories by English writer Charles Dickens was published. This novella was entitled A Christmas Carol in Prose, Being a Ghost Story of Christmas. We know it today as simply A Christmas Carol. In 2007, Bah Humbug Productions, in association with Parkland College Theater, presented the first production of a new script of A Christmas Carol, specifically written for the Parkland stage, by Nick Schneider, with original music by Tim Schirmer. The broadcast you are about to hear is a condensed version of that script, as performed at Parkland over the past 3 weeks. I'm Brad Mertens, and for the past 3 years, I've portrayed the character of Fred Tugwell, Ebenezer Scrooge's nephew. As I have done on the stage, I'll conduct the telling of this ageless story through the voices of the many characters encountered by my Uncle Scrooge, as they are portrayed by members of the cast. So, for the next hour or so, sit back, as in the days of old, as my fellow actors and I tell this magical tale to you in our own special way. We hope your spirits will be lifted by it.
I have endeavored in this ghostly little book to raise the ghost of an idea, which shall not put my readers out of humor with themselves, with each other, with the season, or with me. May it haunt their houses pleasantly, and no one wish to lay it. Their faithful friend and servant, Charles Dickens.
Charles Dickens wrote the story we know as A Christmas Carol as a comment on English society at the time of the early 19th century. The story has become, however, an ageless tale of the spirit of the Christmas season.
It's a tale of times past, to be sure. More directly, a tale of the trials and tribulations of one Ebenezer Scrooge's past, present, and likely future. But it's a story that teaches us about hope, about living above and beyond despair, about kindness and love, and about family.
It's really a story about life. History, as you very well may know, has a way of repeating itself, regardless of our best efforts to change it. And those repetitions, those ghosts of history, are what haunt us.
So this story about a man and his struggle with a season of the year for which he has no use, appreciation, or love, is really about the spirit and the spirits of that season.
And while this is a story for the time of Christmastide, it's surely a ghost story about ghosts we all know. Or more likely, fear to know. The ghosts of the past, the present, and the future.
So, as my friends and I tell the tale, listen carefully. Watch not with your eyes, but with your heart. And forget not your memories. They could rise up and haunt you. To begin with, Jacob Marley was dead, and there is no doubt whatever about that. The register of his burial was signed by the clergyman, the undertaker, and the sole mourner and my only uncle, Ebenezer Scrooge. Old Marley was dead as a doornail. Mind, I don't mean to say that I know of my own knowledge what there is particularly dead about a doornail, but the wisdom of our ancestors is in the simile, and my unhallowed hands shall not disturb it, or the country is done for. You will therefore permit me to repeat emphatically that Marley was dead as a doornail. This must be distinctly understood, or nothing wonderful can come of the story you're going to see and hear. So let's be off. Although Marley had been dead for many years, my Uncle Scrooge never painted out old Marley's name on the sign, and there it stood years afterwards. Sometimes people new to the business called Scrooge Scrooge, and sometimes Marley, but he answered to both names. It was all the same to him. Well, everything was all the same to him, and everything was cold as cold could be, and he didn't thaw it 1 degree for Christmas. We join now as a group of carolers stops by outside of Scrooge's office on the eve of Christmas.
Our Savior was born on Christmas Day to save us all from season's pyre when we were gone astray. Oh, tidings of comfort and joy, comfort and joy. Oh, tidings of comfort and joy.
Away, you scallywags and beggars! Have you nothing better to do than interrupt my work and distract my clerk from his copying counting? Off with you and your petty little lyrics. And you, Bob Cratchit, how is it you're not at your desk earning your pay? Or would you prefer to go home with what you have in that shovel instead of your 15 shillings? Now back to your desk. If you can't sit still till 7, perhaps you should find another line of work.
Oh, no, sir. Sorry, sir. Just needed to warm the fingers a bit, sir. Didn't want to blur an important entry, you understand?
No, I don't understand, nor do I need to. Now, back to your work.
Yes, sir.
Merry Christmas, Uncle. God save you.
Ah, humbug on your Christmas.
Christmas? A humbug, Uncle? You don't believe that, I'm sure.
I do. Merry Christmas, you say. What right have you to be merry? What reason have you to be merry? You're poor enough.
Come then. What right have you to be dismal? What reason have you to be morose? You're rich enough.
Bah, humbug.
Don't be cross, Uncle.
When else can I be when I live in such a world of fools as this? Merry Christmas. Out upon Merry Christmas. What's Christmas time to you but a time for paying bills without money? A time for finding yourself a year older but not an hour richer? If I could work my will, every idiot who goes about with Merry Christmas on his lips should be boiled with his own pudding and buried with a stake of holly through his heart.
Uncle!
Nephew, keep Christmas in your own way and let me keep it in mine.
Keep it? But you don't keep it.
Well, let me leave it alone then. Much good it may do you, much good it has ever done you.
Well, there are many things from which I might have derived good, but have not profited from, Christmas among them. But I've always thought of Christmas time as a good time, a kind, forgiving, charitable, pleasant time. The only time I know of in the long calendar of the year where men and women seem by one consent to open their shut-up hearts freely and to think of people below them as if they really were fellow passengers to the grave. And therefore, Uncle, though it has never put a scrap of gold or silver in my pocket, I believe that it has done me good and will do me good, and I say, God bless it.
Let me hear another sound from you, Bob Cratchit, and you'll keep your Christmas by losing your situation. You're quite a powerful speaker, sir. I wonder you don't go into Parliament.
Don't be angry, Uncle. Come dine with us tomorrow.
I'll see you in Parliament first.
But why? Why?
Why? Why did you get married?
Because I fell in love.
Because you fell in love. Good afternoon.
But Uncle, you never came to see me before that happened. Why give it as a reason for not coming now?
Good afternoon.
I want nothing from you. I ask nothing of you. Why cannot we be friends?
Good afternoon.
I am sorry with all my heart to find you so resolute. We have never had any quarrel to which I have been a party. But I have made my visit in homage to Christmas, and I'll keep my Christmas humor to the last. So, a Merry Christmas, Uncle.
Good afternoon.
And Happy New Year.
Good afternoon. You'll want all day tomorrow, I suppose.
If quite convenient, sir?
Well, it's not convenient and it's not fair. If I were to hold back half a crown for it, you'd think it unfair. And yet you don't think it unfair when I pay a day's wage for no work.
But Christmas is but once a year, sir.
Humbug, a poor excuse for picking a man's pocket every 25th of December. Nonetheless, I suppose you must have the whole day. Be here all the earlier the morning after.
Oh, yes, sir. Of course, sir. I'll make it up to you, sir. And Merry Christmas to you, sir.
So here is to Jerry and to his bright cheek, pray God send all master a good piece of beef. And a good piece of beef that may we all see, with the wassailing bowl we'll drink to thee.
Waiting outside the cold and snowy early evening for his father is the fragile but happy Cratchit son, by name Tiny Tim.
Father!
Tim! Oh, my goodness, dear son, I didn't know you were out here waiting on me. You shouldn't be standing in the cold.
Oh, it's not so cold, Father, and I so wanted to walk with you tonight. Mother said it would be all right.
Well, then, let's make a trip of it and look in some of the shops along the way.
Oh, but Mother said we shouldn't dawdle along the way home.
Well, a couple of shops isn't dawdling. So how about a ride, young man?
Oh, Father, you needn't carry me. I can manage.
Yes, son, I know. But we'll likely get through the crowd a bit faster this way. So up you go, and off we go.
Good evening, Mr. Cratchit. You've quite blowed upon your bark, looks like.
Oh, no, Mr. Fitzhugh. 'Tis a bundle I'm certainly enjoying to carry this Christmas Eve.
Yes, I'd say. And one for Father Christmas to take good care of as well. Don't you agree, Mr. Kirchner?
Aye, Mr. Gadbury. Father Christmas it must be, as I doubt that fellow you work for will provide much of anything in honor of the holiday, if any at all.
But my father says Mr. Scrooge has a decent business, that it keeps us from the cold and the wind and puts food on our table.
Indeed it does, my dear son. Well, gentlemen, a good evening to you all and a Merry Christmas.
And the same to you, Bob Cratchit.
Yes, indeed. Waste not the time that old geezer spared you. Merry Christmas.
Why, Mrs. Dilbert, good evening. Shouldn't think you'd be out and about this time of the day.
Oh, neither should I, Mr. Cratchit, except for that old goat of an employer of mine, and yours, I might say. Working on my knees most of the day to keep clean the old Marley house that squint of a man took over to live in after poor Jacob died. And for what? For the likes of nothing.
Well, there's always a blessing or two to be had if you look up every now and then.
Oh, looking up isn't the problem, Mr. Cratchit. It's getting up. And except for collecting me wage, I could do without seeing that miserly old curmudgeon of a man ever again. Good night to you, Mr. Cratchit, and to your young'un.
And good night to you, Mrs. Dilber, and a Merry Christmas to you.
Merry Christmas?
Oh, mister, how about a sprig of ollie to take to the missus just to keep your place at top of the household for the coming year? Or maybe for a dottle child to put upon her bedstead to keep away any little goblins, or to shelter the poor tiny spirits of the wood.
Thank you, young lady, but I don't know that I need any tonight. And anyway, I don't have...
Father, a small sprig of her holly might bring us good fortune.
Good fortune indeed. And for a mere pittance of a farthing or a penny, you'd be in bloom for a year.
Well... I suppose.
Much obliged, mister. A Merry Christmas to you and to the lad. Hey, Mr. Scrooge. How about a sprig of ollie to take to the missus so as to keep your place at top of the household? Or to provide a shelter to the poor tiny spirits of the wood?
Young woman, you can take your wares elsewhere, as I need no protection. I have no missus, and I shelter no spirits, tiny or otherwise, in my house. Now, off with you.
Ah, Mr. Marley, is it?
It is not, excuse me.
Oh, forgive us, Mr. Scrooge. A simple slip of the tongue by my colleague, Mr. Bostwick. You know, the sign says Scrooge and Marley, and 'tis a simple mistake.
'Tis a simpleton's mistake. Mr. Marley's been dead these 7 years. 7 years ago this very evening.
God be with him, and you for his loss.
The loss of such a generous and well-respected partner must have been overwhelming, I should say.
I should say this interruption is overwhelming.
Oh, but Mr. Scrooge, at this festive season of the year, such interruption allows for one to make some slight provision to the poor and destitute, who suffer greatly at this present time.
Many thousands are in want of common necessaries and common comforts, sir, and Mr. Coatsworth and I are asking your help on their behalf so as to allay their fears and needs, sir.
Are there no prisons?
Plenty of prisons.
And the workhouses, are they still in operation?
Oh, but of course, sir. Still, I wish I could say they were not.
The treadmill and pool are in full vigor, then.
Both very busy.
Oh, I was afraid from what you had said at first that something had occurred to stop their usefulness.
Under the impression that they scarcely furnish Christian cheer of mind or body, a few of us are endeavoring to raise a fund to buy these poor souls some meat and drink and means of warmth.
And we choose this time because it is a time of all others when want is keenly felt and abundance rejoices. What shall we put you down for?
Nothing.
You wish to be anonymous.
I wish to be left alone. Since you ask me what I wish, gentlemen, that is my answer. I do not make merry myself at Christmas, and I can't afford to make idle people merry either. I support the establishments I have mentioned, and those who are badly off must go there.
But many cannot go there, and many would rather die.
Well, if they had rather die, then they had better do it and decrease the surplus population. Besides, who knows if that's the case?
But you might know it.
Yeah, but it's not my business. It's enough for a man to understand his own business and not to interfere with other people's business. Good evening, gentlemen.
Yes, good evening, Mr. Scrooge. Not exactly a model Father Christmas, would you say, Mr. Coatsworth?
Oh, Mr. Bostwick, ever the philosopher. Shall we to the pub for a pint?
Scrooge is not, shall I say, a man who you might want as your next-door neighbor. Encountering solicitors like Bostwick and Coatsworth, or carolers making their rounds through London streets, was not an enjoyable experience for him, as if anything connected to Christmas was. So upon leaving the solicitors behind, Scrooge took his melancholy dinner in his usual melancholy tavern, and having read all the newspapers and beguiled the rest of the evening with his banker's book, went home to the house that once belonged to his deceased partner.
As he approached the old house, the yard was so dark that even Scrooge, who knew its every stone, was fain to grope with his hands. The eeriness of the place overtook him, and the night seemed to talk as from the past. The fog and frost so hung about the dark old gateway of the house that it seemed as if the genius of the weather sat in mournful meditation on the threshold.
Scrooge, Ebenezer Scrooge.
He paused, with a moment's irresolution, then opened the door.
Humbug. Humbug. Nonsense is all it is.
Nonsense, Mr. Scrooge? Oh, but I was ready in your bed as I do every evening, Mr. Scrooge.
I wasn't addressing you, Mrs. Smythe. I was simply commenting on the evening's fog and glow of the street lamps. Did you not stoke the fire for me as I've asked you to repeatedly?
Oh, I was about to take care of it as soon as I finished with the bed, sir. You're home a bit early tonight, dear sir.
According to you, I'm home a bit early every evening. If you can't get your schedule properly arranged, I might arrange to have it permanently dismissed. Now, if you don't mind, warm my gruel and make your departure forthwith. But, and don't forget to put on the latch.
Yes, sir. Right away, sir. 'Tis Christmas Eve, sir, and I do want so much to be with me family.
Christmas, Christmas, Christmas. I'm tired of hearing Christmas. Get done your chores and off with you. Humbug to your Christmas.
'Twas indeed the night before Christmas, and all through my uncle's house, the spirits were whirring, scurrying, not unlike a mouse. And Scrooge, in his night robe and warm sleeping cap, sat with his gruel near the fire for taking his nap.
It was then that the bells started to ring. Bells whose clappers had not touched their sound rings in years rang without hesitation and shook the walls all around. Then nothing, but for an instant, then a clanking noise as if some person were dragging a heavy chain upstairs, coming straight towards his door, and then, as if there were no door, a ghost of a figure entered the room.
What is this? 'Tis a relic, is it? Must be this gruel. Humbug, I say.
Throwing the remaining gruel into the fire, Scrooge turned toward the apparition. What was this thing, this dubious figure emerging through a mist that dropped from nowhere into the room? Was it real? Scrooge was incredulous, but questioned it nonetheless.
How now? What, may I ask, do you want?
Much.
Who are you?
Ask me whom I was.
Who were you, then? You are particular for a shadow.
In life, I was your partner, Jacob Marley.
Marley, you say, as in Jacob Marley? Well, Jacob, will you, can you sit down?
I can.
Well, if you don't mind.
You don't believe in me, do you?
I don't.
Why do you doubt your senses?
Because little things affect them. A slight disorder of the stomach fools them. You may be an undigested bit of beef, a crumb of cheese, a fragment of underdone potato. There's more of gravy than a grave about you. Humbug, I say.
Whereupon Marley's ghost flew into the air and spinning around until finally settling into a chair that appeared from nowhere.
Mercy, dreadful apparition, why do you trouble me?
It is required of every man that the spirit within him should walk among his fellow men. And if that spirit goes not forth in life, it is condemned to do so after death!
You are fettered, chained. Tell me why.
I wear the chain I forged in life. I made it link by link and yard by yard of my own free will. And of my own free will, I wore it. Do you not know the weight and length of the chain you bear yourself? It is as full, heavy, and as long as it was 7 Christmas Eves ago. And you have built it even stronger since. It is a ponderous weight to drag behind you.
Oh, Jacob, my old dear friend Jacob Marley, speak comfort to me.
I have none to give. I cannot rest, I cannot stay, I cannot linger anywhere. As in life, my spirit has never walked beyond the narrow limits of our money-changing home.
Not left our counting house? Well, you must be very slow, Jacob.
Slow?
7 years dead. Traveling all the time, but not beyond our walls.
The whole time, no rest, no peace, incessant torture of remorse.
But you might have gotten over a great quantity of ground in 7 years.
Once again, the ghost of Marley rose in the air even higher than before, spinning and circling about Scrooge, who, in a useless act of desperation, hid, no, cowered, behind his favorite sitting chair.
But I have been bound, double ironed and captive, and did not know that one's mortal life is too short for the vast means of usefulness of the Christian spirit.
But you were always a good man of business, Jacob.
Business? Mankind was my business. The common welfare was my business. Charity, mercy, forbearance, and benevolence were all my business. The dealings of my trade were but a drop of water in the ocean of my business.
Ah! Hear me! My time is nearly gone.
Don't be hard upon me, Jacob.
Ebenezer, I have sat invisible beside you many a day as part of my life's penance. But I am here tonight to warn you that you have yet a chance and hope of escaping my fate. You will be haunted by 3 spirits.
Is that the chance and hope?
It is.
Oh, I think I'd rather not.
Without their visits, you cannot hope to shun the path I walk. Expect the first tomorrow when the bell tolls one.
Could I not take them all at once and have it over, Jacob?
Expect the second on the next night at the same hour, the third upon the next night, following the last stroke of 12. You will see me no more. But remember what has passed between us.
And as quickly as he had appeared, the ghost disappeared, leaving my uncle notably disturbed and more than perplexed by all of this. Had he really encountered the ghost of his former partner, Jacob Marley? Or was it, as he suggested, simply a case of indigestion inducing a bad dream? Well, in any case, he made sure that the doors and windows were closed and locked, and barricaded himself against the promised onslaught of ghosts predicted by the specter just encountered. It was after 2 a.m. when my uncle finally retired to his bed. But what time was it, really?
It isn't possible. Just not possible that I have slept through a whole day and far into another night. I've just overslept. It's 12 noon, I'm sure.
In my uncle's world, on this night, it appears that time's cadence has been significantly altered. Quarter past midnight. Half past. Indeed, time seems to disappear for my uncle. Maybe this is all just a dream? I'll leave that up to you.
Quarter to one, so soon. The hour itself in nothing.
Once the room was filled with dazzling light and sparkles and music and sounds of unearthly nature. Scrooge sat up in sudden response and found himself face to face with a creature of indescribable and iridescent features.
Are you one of the spirits whose coming was foretold to me?
I am.
Well, who and what are you?
I am the ghost of Christmas past.
Long past?
No, your past.
You know, kind spirit, 'tis an interesting cap you carry. I think that I would like to see you wear it upon your head.
What? Would you so soon put out with worldly hands my light? Is it not enough that you are one of those whose passions made this cap? And force me through eons of years to wear it low upon my brow.
Oh, no, 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 kind spirit, I meant not to offend. I had no intention of turning down your wonderful glow, please believe me. But pray tell, what brings you here to my house?
Your welfare.
Welfare? Rather, I could use some sleep.
Your reclamation, then. Take heed, rise, and come with me.
Come with you, but where?
To your past.
Oh, I think not. I am not like you. I am but a mortal.
That you are. But take my hand. Fear nothing. Let us be off on our journey.
As Scrooge uncomfortably took its hand, he was whisked away into a past long forgotten, and found himself back in a schoolroom and occupied by schoolmates of his younger self, who he comes face to face with, followed by the entrance of a young girl. Scrooge is taken aback as the scene unfolds.
Good heavens, I know this place, and oh my goodness, I... Fan!
Ebenezer! Dear brother, I've come to bring you home. Can you believe it, dear brother? You're coming home.
Home, Fan? Oh, dear sister, how I wish it were so.
Oh, but it is so. Father is so much kinder than he used to be. That home's like heaven. He spoke so gently to me one night that I was not afraid to ask him once more if you might return home. And he said yes. Yes, you should.
You sure Father said yes? Fan, I couldn't quite believe that Father...
Yes, you can believe. And now we can be together all the Christmas season long and have the merriest time in all the world. We can be a family again.
You're quite a little lady, Fan. It's going to be so wonderful.
Fan, enough of your childish eagerness. We've things to do. I have appointments waiting. We need to move on. Ebenezer.
Father, Fan was just telling me...
So she has, so she will. I've ordered your things down, Ebenezer. I trust you're ready to be off. We'll drop you at Fezziwig's warehouse.
Fezziwig's warehouse? But Fan said...
I've arranged for your apprenticeship with him. He'll also provide you room and board as part of your wage. Try not to disappoint your family. Come along, Fan.
Oh, Ebenezer, dear brother, we'll be together, I'm sure.
Yes, dear Fan. Father said yes, did not. Let's be off. Father Christmas is waiting.
Oh, I can't wait. It will be wonderful.
Always a delicate creature, your sister. A woman whom a breath might have withered, but with a large heart.
So she had. You're right, I'll not deny it, Spirit, God forbid.
She died following marriage, I think, and had a son.
Yes, my nephew, Fred.
Your only surviving family, true?
True.
Once again, the Spirit takes Scrooge's hand, and they are transported ahead to a time when Scrooge's life had apparently taken a turn for the better. To the time of his apprenticeship with the family Fezziwig.
And do you know this place?
Do I know it? Why, it's Fezziwig's warehouse. I was apprenticed here. There's Sarah and Dick Wilkins, my dear old friend Dick. Oh, my goodness, there's old Fezziwig. Oh, bless his heart, it's Fezziwig alive again.
Well done, Jonathan, my dear. Are you all so engaged that you've lost track of the time this evening?
Oh, my goodness. So we have, my dear wife. So we have. Sarah?
Yes, Mr. Fezziwig?
Sarah, look at the time. Seems we've almost forgotten that tonight's the eve of Christmas.
Oh, my goodness, Mr. Fezziwig. It's 7.
Well, let's be off. Yo-ho, my girls and boys, no more work tonight. It's Christmas Eve. Let's have the shutters up before a body can say Jack Robinson. Victoria, call in our daughters.
Well, my dear friend Ebenezer, looks like the party begins, and I'll wager a guess as to who you hope next comes through that door.
You rascal. You know my fondness for a certain Fezziwig daughter, so your guess is likely not to be wrong.
Yo-ho there, Ebenezer, Dick, hilly-ho, clear away, my lads. Let's have lots of room here. Carolyn, gather everyone you can find. Sarah, let's get the festivities started.
Oh, yes, sir, right away, sir!
Hilly-ho, Dick, cheer up, Ebenezer. Fast with the decorations, tis time to celebrate.
Now, Belle, you must hold yourself as a delight for young Mr. Scrooge. I think he has a fancy for you.
Oh, Mother, what makes you think so?
It's a mother's duty to know such things. Now, remember your composure, and don't forget to smile delicately. It might not hurt to sigh a little when he looks your way.
Mother!
Can you say bells are jingling? Can you pipe a play?
Mr. Scrooge, I didn't know you danced so well.
Neither did I, my dear Miss Fezziwig. It must be your lead.
My lead indeed, Mr. Scrooge. You jest so to see me blush with embarrassment.
Jest I do not, and as for the blush upon your soft face, it is but another rose in the bouquet I hold in my arms.
Christmas.
Ah, so my father's scribe is a poet, is he now?
A poet? I think not, my dear lady. I am but an observer and recorder of beauty.
If you hear the music, join the dance. It will make your spirits bright. Then we'll carve our rolls and raise a cheery toast, for it's Christmas Eve tonight. Can you say bells all jingling? Can you hear the piper play? The world's alive with music. Tomorrow's Christmas Day. Look out for Father Christmas. Look out for Father Christmas. Look out for Father Christmas. Christmas Day.
Well done.
So, what do you think, Ebenezer? What a fine time this is. Is not Master Fezziwig first rate?
Oh, to be sure. If there's any good about my father, I can thank him for it. 'Tis this position with Master Fezziwig. And then, of course, there's his daughter, Belle. Oh, Dick, she is simply wonderful.
That she is, my good friend. That she is. Good that her father is a jovial and understanding sort, else you might be left out in the yard for such a thought.
I hope old Fezziwig approves. Belle is so beautiful, so soft, so kind.
So much happiness, so much gratitude, and yet so small an effort to please these silly folks.
A small effort?
Small. 3 or 4 pounds of your mortal money buys memories to last forever. And there is no doubt you praise him highly, as do any of those who have worked with him.
Oh, good spirit! Fezziwig had the power to render us happy or unhappy, or to make our service light or burdensome. But his power was with words and looks, all of which are impossible to add up. The happiness he gives is as great as if it cost a fortune.
What is the matter?
Nothing in particular. It's just that...
That what?
That Belle and I, we never... Somehow I and Belle, well, I mean, I wish I had taken time to...
Taken the time to love her instead of another entry in one of your ledgers? Perhaps time is what you should have been accounting for instead of shillings in a purse. The year that followed passed quite quickly, did it not?
Belle, dear, you seem so heavy-hearted and sad. This should be a happy time for us.
So it should, but it seems as if some other idol has replaced me in your heart. A golden one, I think.
Oh, Belle, there is nothing so hard as poverty, and there is nothing that can condemn it better than the pursuit of wealth.
You fear the world too much, Ebenezer. All your hopes have merged into what? I have seen your nobler aspirations fall off, one by one, until only wealth immerses you. You have changed. When we began, you were another man.
I was a boy.
Your own feeling tells you that you are not what you once were, but I am. The happiness we had when we were one has turned to misery, now that we are two. Oh, Ebenezer, I have thought of this so often that I cannot and will not say. Now I release you with a full heart for the love of him you once were.
Release? Belle, you must understand.
You may have pain in this, a very, very brief time of pain, but you will dismiss the recollection of it, I'm sure, as an unprofitable dream. May you be happy in the life you have chosen.
Belle! Oh, Belle, I choose you. You are my life, my love. I choose you. Well, do something, you imbecile. You inconsiderate booby. Stop her. No, please, no more, spirit. Show me no more. Conduct me home. Remove me from this place.
I told you. These were shadows of the things that have been. You chose work over love, over family. It was your choice. That these shadows haunt you, do not blame me. They are what they are.
Remove me, I cannot bear it. Leave me, take me back, haunt me no longer.
And Scrooge and the spirit began a struggle to end all struggles. Around and around they went, until, nearly exhausted, Scrooge managed to grab the spirit's cap, and pressing it upon its head, slowly but surely extinguished its glow, and the ghost vanished. Then, just as he was about to collapse once again into his bed, another light, even brighter than the first,
streamed in from every crack and crevice of the old house, as a booming voice from behind a parlor door greeted him.
Ebenezer, please come in.
You just heard Act One of a special radio adaptation for WYLL Radio of Bah Humbug Productions and Parkland Theater's version of Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol here on AM 580 and FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly, host of Live and Local. Before we continue with Act Two,